Hello and welcome to Aalto Helsinki podcast, a student-led show that opens the doors to the world of science. Hello and welcome to the 8th episode. This week your hosts will be I, Sof.
And I, Anni. Hello.
And today is an exciting day because we have guests all the way from Greece. Anni, would you like to tell a bit more about our guests before welcoming them into the studio?
Yeah, sure. So early this spring, when we were brainstorming for our project idea, we noticed that a fellow iGEM team was working on a similar topic last year, 2020. So we contacted the Greece team and ended up starting a partnership with them.
So let's welcome to the studio Team Thessaly. It's so nice to have you here, guys.
Hello, it's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's really great being here. Thank you for having us.
So before we move on to the discussion, would you both like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah. Hello, I am George and I'm currently studying computer science in the University of Thessaly. And in the team, I am the co-head of the dry lab.
Hello from me as well. I'm Konstantinos. I'm an undergraduate student of biochemistry and biotechnology. And in the team, I act as the head of human practices.
Oh, cool. So as mentioned, we are working with similar topic related to the gut microbiota and health this year. So would you like to tell a bit more about your project?
Yeah, of course. So as you said, we're working on similar projects. In particular, we have two sub projects. I'll talk about the capsule and Kostas can continue on the probiotic sub-project. So we are developing a medical kit with the hopes of creating a holistic approach to tackle gut microbiome health. My part is in the project as the co-head of DryLab is the design of the capsule that will detect, with the help of a biosensor, SCFAs, or the lack thereof. What differentiates our design from other capsules in the market is that we want to send our data to a mobile phone.
And after you receive the data from the capsule, we have designed an application in which a multidisciplinary team of experts can identify the existence or not of gut dysbiosis, which is our main issue. And the final step of the project is actually a probiotic supplement, a live biotherapeutic that can replenish the ACFAs missing, the most abundant metabolites of the gut bacteria. And so we holistically approach this issue, we detect the problem, and then we try to propose a solution to it.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of want to like hear the really simple version of how will that help.
Okay, so the one aspect is the capsule that actually detects the SCFAs and gives data to the application. And the probiotic supplement that we're developing is actually based on three different strains with three different receptors. Each one of them is of different force. For instance, we have a receptor that's very strong, one that's mediocre, and the other one that's low. So you correlate how much ACFAs you're missing, if you're missing a lot. So, okay, you can take the probiotic supplement that has the very strong promoter that produces the ACFAs needed. So you can take that supplement and actually gives food to the good bacterial populations in your gut. So you're stabilizing the conditions that your microbiome actually works. That's the idea, basically.
So basically what you're creating is a therapeutic tool.
Yes, it's not a therapeutic per se, but basically, yeah, that's what it does. Because if you consider dysbiosis not like a disease, it's like the harbinger of a disease. So you actually, it is a prevention toolkit. You administer the probiotic in order to not go to the next phase where the symptoms and the disease is spread erratically and you cannot pinpoint it. And it's very adverse to different patients. For instance, we've talked to gastroenterologists and told us, for example, patients that suffer with Crohn's disease, the one has perfect gut permeability, it can receive nutrients perfectly, and you have another person that cannot receive nothing. And its diet basically is as simple as possible. If you could give him amino acids and basic carbohydrates, it would be perfect.
That's really cool. And that's like really smart
So basically, yes, you're creating this preventative tool. And I feel like that's the biggest difference between our teams.
By the way, as a side note, if you want to hear more about our project, we talk about that in our fourth podcast episode.
So to continue with the discussion, if I haven't understood wrong, this is your second year working on the project, right?
Yes, we are. But as we said already, we are adding a few things to our previous project and making it more holistic. So it's a more of a broad approach. It's kind of more difficult, but also kind of exciting at the same time, as all projects are, I suppose. Most of the people in this year's team are new and don't know how iGEM works. It was kind of an adjustment period. But yeah, I mean, it's July, end of July almost. So I think we are on a good track. And we have about 2.5 months until the end of the competition. So yeah, I think we are on a good track.
Yeah, and if I could actually add on that, as far as human practices go, COVID-19 last year made it almost impossible to conduct proper human practices. You couldn't find experts to talk to. We weren't used to using technical needs to our cause. And any public communication and engagement activity was literally impossible. So on that aspect, this year is like starting from scratch and the work's a lot to do. And one final note, the iGEM competition, since it tried to work around the COVID-19 pandemic, tried to come up with solutions to aid the separate teams that were struggling. And the two-phase project proposal was one of it, but it was its first year, so it wasn't implemented as correctly as it could be. We face some issues that come from the iGEM headquarters as well.
Yes, that's a fair point.
Yeah, our team, for instance, was unable to enter the laboratory to conduct any experiments. It was impossible to do so. And at that period, we decided that the best for us, if it is to give to the world something that's worthwhile, to move to the two-phase category of projects, since the competition gave us this opportunity to do so. It wasn't something planned from the beginning. Other iGEM teams that we've seen last year were more organized on that aspect, but it came up quite late to decide.
Yes, so as a conclusion, we could maybe say that no matter if your project is a one-year project or a two-year project, it's still very challenging.
Yeah, obviously. Because at the end of the day, we're all students. We don't have experience in research. We don't have the funds. We're not experienced. We're just students that have some spare time and devoted to research. Obviously, it's challenging. But at the same time, it's exciting because we wouldn't have that that experience otherwise.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So if we move on to the actual projects and the topics around it. So both our projects touch the mental health aspect. So could you maybe tell us how mental health problems are experienced, increase in general?
We've come in contact with several experts, from clinical psychologists to public health experts. The main issue, apart from the social stigma that surrounds mental health issues, especially in Greece, is that the gastrointestinal problems and the psychological ones are not correlated, and they are seen separately as just two separate issues and not as a whole. The knowledge on handling those issues is there. Greek psychologists are quite proficient in that. But at the same time, there is little cooperation with the gastroenterologist and other experts. And unfortunately, the infrastructure surrounding mental health issues is still outdated. That's why projects like yours, specifically since it's a research toolkit for progress, the research on that field is so important, because they're not issues like a bruise when you can detect by looking at it. It's very difficult to actually diagnose and determine the problem. So we can only move forward on that and provide material and certain tools for scientists to actually verify and identify such issues.
Yes, yeah, I agree. Maybe we could talk about the stigma a little bit more. And I was actually just reading online this morning that every second Finn experiences a mental health disorder during their lifetime. And I think that in many cases, the stigma that comes with the disorder makes it difficult to be open about them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like in Finland, a lot of people are now more aware of this. And social media, for example, they are like doing something about it, drawing attention that this is a real issue and mental health is a big deal. But still, like as explained earlier, a lot of it is not known, and how, for example, our gut affects it.
Yeah, so maybe a question that we could ask you guys is that how do you think that we could possibly overcome the issue of stigma? Do you have any ideas?
My answer always in the issues about awareness is always to teach young kids and young adults in school, and have like seminars, awareness in the classrooms, also all that kind of thing. Because okay, so awareness obviously is it is taught in the house first, and then in the school. But in our school, we don't have that kind of thing, because most of the schools are underfunded. Obviously, they have outdated methods, and that doesn't help. So you learn something in your house from your parents, and then you don't hear that in the school. So it's kind of contradicting, especially like men try to be men and don't have feelings and don't feel pain. And you see that not only with kids, but you see that with adults that have experience, and they act stupid, like, I'm a man, I don't need to experience pain, or I don't experience pain. But that's not exactly their fault. It's like society's fault. And when I say society, I mean all of the people, because we promote that. We promote kind of one-sided thought.
And I think that this is also something that actually prevents people from seeking help.
It's not natural. That's what people don't understand, is that it has a very large, a very vague range of how can a mental health issue can be presented to a person. And if I could add to what George said, I don't believe that the issue right now are kids and younger generations. We're more familiar with these issues that our parents and grandparents were. The important aspect is to actually, two things in my mind. The first one is the knowledge is there, but we must promote it in the manyest way possible. For instance, there might be a center for your mental health in your neighborhood, and you wouldn't be aware of it because there's not such promotion, or it's not been something that can be heard from your school, from your parents, from your neighbors, from the government. It's been sidelined. So one thing is to make sure to promote the structures that exist and the experts that can help you. And the second one is to go the people that actually hold the and be the most important part aspect of society, and just expose what a mental health issue is. It's not only schizophrenia or a bipolar disorder. It's being stressed. It's having a panic attack. It's being and feeling moody and in a sunny day. It's not something illogical. It's not something surreal. So it must be done in all ways possible. And fortunately, us in our generation, we're more accepting, and we take more things into consideration. If we can just be brave enough and have the courage and patience to clash with our elders and actually point it out, then something can actually happen.
Yeah, I think these are really good points. And if we could somehow normalize these things and thoughts, like in our generation or adults, like the kids also inherit the attitude.
Right. It's something that stays and becomes a social principle and society's principle. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's something that at least I've picked up from my psychology background that, you know, instead of judging people, you try to understand them, and different is not bad.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I believe it comes down to a cause and effect relation. Every behavior has a cause, and what you experience is its effect. If you can narrow down the cause, then you solve the and you change the effect that might have.
Yeah.
It's just everything in our body is a big railway of signaling pathways, etc. Once we can pinpoint how a particular pathway affects your state, then there are a bazillion molecules in between in which we can tweak, or we could perhaps add something to identify it. I believe we can learn a lot. Our two projects prove that we can actually find something that naturally occurs in our body, and through the means of synthetic biology and the biological systems all around us. Later on, we could perhaps create a bacterial strain that actually produces dopamine or pheromones to make you fall in love more easily. I don't know. Anything is possible.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's really, really interesting as well. Like all the biology and chemistry behind all our emotions and thoughts and all that. Really interesting.
Yeah, I find it very interesting as well, but also maybe a bit scary because like, does that mean that we could actually like modify our
control, mind control?
Yeah, it exactly. Could be.
Yep.
That's where I come in as human practice and say, no,
yeah,
you can't do that. There are limitations, and that's how it should be. We could take 4 or 5 steps forward, but then you don't know who is going to take advantage and what's going to do with your project. So you must be very cautious on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were just discussing yesterday with some of the Trilab members that as exciting and fun synthetic biology is, it also comes with some very severe or like very questionable like ethical issues that we need to consider.
Yeah, definitely.
So like we need to set kind of like the limits, as you said as well, Konstantinos, and see where do we end.
That's a big question. And especially I think it's a bit scary for those people who don't understand or like they just don't have the knowledge of it. So like what can be done and what cannot be done and all the ethical things, and they don't know that like also the benefits and all the good things that can be accomplished, but they see the fear like, okay, what if like something goes wrong? And
yes, definitely.
Right. It's fear of the unknown, basically, from the people that don't understand. It's quite reasonable.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
But I think that's it's more of a science thing. Like all of the sciences have that kind of problem, because when they made the nuclear bomb, the scientists that made it didn't want to make it a weapon. They were like, oh yeah, that's interesting. We did that, and look, we can do that like a really good power source. That it is shown that it's really good for the planet, and it's really safe, safer than all the fossil fuel plants. But 70 years later, almost, there's still fear about the nuclear plants.
Mm-hmm. At this point in time, since knowledge is spread, and it's spread much more than it was in the past, there are a lot more human brains that are actually weighing the situation and decide what's good and wrong. It's I don't know if you have that saying, but here in Greece we have a saying that says, give a surgeon a knife is something that can actually save a life, but if we give it to a thief, it can actually take a life. As Sophie said earlier, it's a burden and a responsibility for us, since we hold this knowledge, A, to spread it correctly to everyone to understand what we are doing, and act upon it. And don't let people with limited knowledge on that aspect just take it, grasp it, and use it without being checked, at least, or in an improper manner.
Yeah, that's a really, really important thing.
And that's the exciting thing, that one issue can have so many different approaches and tackle so many different problems. That's actually remarkable. You can take a little piece of information and then accelerate it and create a whole project that can actually solve multiple different ones. That's the amazing part of it.
Yeah, that's the amazing part of iGEM.
So let's thank Team Thessaly for coming. Thank you, George and Konstantinos. It was such a lovely chat with you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for having us, girls.
Thank you all for listening and stay tuned for the next episode where we chat with Manuel from Synbio Powerhouse.
See you next week.